Hey, this is Nate Weir, Nate K. Weir, and I'm so excited to be here on a special episode of Power of X.
What's up, Familia? It is Dayspring here with a special episode of Power of X-Men, and I'm trying not to fanboy out over our guest today because I discovered his TikTok during a very dark period in my life, during the lockdown, and it was a time when I didn't think there was a lot of joy in the world, but I knew if I could go to his account, I would see his cosplay journey, his videos, his fitness journey, and it always put the biggest smile on my face. Familia, I am so excited to welcome Nate K. Weir on the podcast.
Oh my goodness. Thank you, Paul. I'm so excited to be here and just talk about fun, nerdy stuff.
Nate, I saw you at MegaCon, and MegaCon in Orlando, Familia. If you haven't been there, it is a very overwhelming experience. There's so many people. I wager it's one of like the top three best cons in the US. But I'm walking through this crowd and I see this very tall Peter Pan. And I'm like, that looks like Nate K. Weir. And it was you. And you were with Christian, who we've met before at New York Comic Con. And I totally just fanboyed out on you.
We were talking about this earlier, but I cannot believe what an experience I had at, MegaCon. Like I said, it was kind of my first big American con that I've ever been to. And just the people that I got to meet, yourself included, my cosplay experience being in Toronto has been very, divided from what feels like the rest of the world. So it was very, very, very cool. And I couldn't have been happier and excited about the opportunities. So I'm just happy to be here.
Wait, so that was your first American con?
I would say it was my first actual American con I've been to. I was at, Colossal Prime last year. But I wouldn't, I mean, that's obviously more of just a party con, and I didn't really get to see much of the actual vendors or anything like that. So I would definitely consider this my first American con, really. And it was insane. It was big. The people were amazing, and no, zero complaints. Absolutely zero.
Well, so I'm curious, how does a con, because I've never been to a con in Canada. I'm curious, how is a Canadian con different from an American con?
I think the biggest thing I noticed, I think everyone might have different experiences with this, right? But I think the biggest thing that I noticed between an American con versus a Canadian con is, I'll take the similarities to start. Vendors are very much the same. Like you go to a Fan Expo thing or a Comic-Con in Toronto versus one, even MegaCon or wherever it is, very similar vendors. If you're going to go shop, you can probably find the same stuff you go anywhere. So like that's kind of the same. But the biggest difference I found, kind of like what I said, is the people. I feel like not a lot of people probably travel to Canada cons or Toronto cons or Calgary or Vancouver, any of those places, but people come from all around the world to go to American cons, whether it's, MegaCon or WonderCon or San Diego Comic-Con, which I haven't been to either yet, but I'm going this year, which I'm super excited about.
Oh, you got so much fun.
I know, but that was it. It's like you're getting all these people from, Instagram, TikTok that you've seen online but never got to meet in person, and then you get to connect with them. Everyone's usually what it feels like staying at hotels or places where like you just go back to a hotel and it's just like everyone's at the con, right? Like from that place, which is really cool. Versus like Toronto, where it's like you go to the con, you go back home, you sleep, you wake up, you go the next day, and it's like it doesn't really have that same atmosphere that I definitely got when I was at MegaCon. So it was very, very cool.
Yeah, so I grew up in Florida. My husband and I, we have a home in Miami, and I never went to MegaCon until last year, and I was blown away by it because it was so big, and to me, it rivals New York Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con. It's not at the level where San Diego Comic Con is, because that's a whole other beast altogether. However, it's probably on the same level as New York Comic Con. And I was just so blown away by it this year. There was just this like magnetic energy there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was special. That's for sure.
So I'm curious to ask, did you deliberately pick MegaCon because you're a big old like comic geek, but you're also a big Disney geek? It takes place in Orlando. This seems like a happy marriage of a lot, like an epicenter of all your interests.
You know what? There was absolutely no rhyme or reason to it. I think what it kind of comes down to is, you know, cosplay is actually a very new thing for me. I still wouldn't necessarily call myself a cosplayer by any means. You know, when I think of it, I always think of myself as a content creator or whatever it is, because, you know, I do look at, you know, all these other people that are cosplayers, and they make these insane elaborate things. And I'm not saying you have to be like a seamstress to be a cosplayer or anything like that, but I also, you know, want to give credit where it's due. And for me, it's, you know, the creating that content, creating that you know, I guess mood and happiness for people and stuff like that. It's less about the actual cosplay itself. However, this year I'm definitely trying to do more of that. MegaCon was kind of, I guess, thrown into my lap in some respect, because as you saw, I went with Christian and another one of my friends, Lisa, and it was just something that they were planning on doing. And, you know, they invited me to it, and I was like, absolutely, I've got nothing else to do but travel and you know, do the things I enjoy right now. So kind of this year is all about, you know, trying to get to these cons, meeting new people, getting more ingrained into the cosplay community. And then, of course, to add to that, Disney. Yes, 100%. We hit a couple days of Disney World, because there's no chance I'm going to Florida without going to Disney. So
okay, but which is your favorite park? If you had to like fuck, marry, kill a park, which one is like your number, like go for it?
So are we only talking Disney World? Because like favorite park hands down is Disneyland.
Okay, that's
there's
fair.
No question there. Yeah.
Talking about Disney World. How
okay.
about that?
We're killing Animal Kingdom. I don't mind, like, I love Avatar and all that, but I can't spend a full day there. I'd probably marry Magic Kingdom.
No,
just because it is like, you know, you go there and it's just what Disney is my first park I ever went to. I just, you know, you fall in love with it. That being said, it's definitely not my favorite park in regards to spending a day there. And that's why I would probably fuck Hollywood Studios, Star Wars, and Toy Story, and everything there. Tower Terror, yeah.
I haven't been to Hollywood Studios. First of all, I'm so confused by the name, because we used to call it MGM Studios growing up in Florida in the 90s. It was MGM Studios, but I don't think I've been there since probably 1995. And there was like a pink Cadillac situation where we sat, and it was like a dive-in or drive-in movie experience, and that is the only memory I have. I don't even know if that still exists.
I think it probably does. But you know, to me Hollywood Studios is just kind of like, you know, I would consider it more similar to like the California Adventure type of thing in you know, LA or Anaheim, because it's definitely more of the adult park, right? You've got Star Wars, you've got Oga's Cantina if you want to grab a drink. You know, you're actually able to drink out in like the open area versus like Magic Kingdom where you can't. There's obviously Toy Story. To me, it's just one of those experiences. It's also got Fantasmic, which is my favorite show probably of all of them. So it's kind of got a nice grouping of things. Epcot is probably still, you know, even though it wasn't in my list, Epcot's always going to be one of those things that's like, you know, last day at Disney, just go there, have fun with friends, relax, you know, stay outside, have drinks and food and all that. But it's less of a Disney park for me than the other ones.
Can I pull on a thread that you were mentioning earlier before, that you're sort of new? You wouldn't call yourself a cosplayer. You kind of just started doing this. You know, you consider yourself more of a content creator. Where did this all begin for you? Like, was it, because again, I came to you during lockdown. Was it a lockdown situation, or like, how did you sort of come to having the presence you have?
Yeah, it was definitely a mix of kind of like building on top of, you know, building blocks in some capacity. But my very first exposure to anything cosplay related was, you know, it was during my fitness journey where I was losing all this weight and stuff like that. And I'm sure we'll mention this later, but like Hercules is my favorite thing of all time. It's my favorite movie. It's my favorite character. I just love Hercules. And I was training for this Disney half marathon because I was like, I want to, you know, this is my goal. You know, I've got all this weight to lose. You know, want to be able to do this for myself. So I sewed this really crappy little Hercules outfit that I don't think anyone's seen it unless they go to the very, very start of my Instagram ever. But it's just like this little brown tank top with like a little blue like cloth sewn onto the back straps of it. But that was like my first kind of, I'm going to say, exposure to any cosplay. And that was for the my first Disney half marathon, which was absolute blast. Had an amazing time. Ended up meeting a ton of like you know, pretty big, we'll call them like Disney influencers on Instagram at that point. And kind of from that point, I started building out a Disney account, which was just, you know, the standard like taking photos on Disney walls and being on rides and like very much that type of thing, you know, very wholesome Disney stuff. And it kind of continued that way until the first Halloween that I was there, which I did at Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween Party. And that's when I sewed my Peter Pan costume. So that Peter Pan costume was like my first full cosplay that I had ever done, and I had done it for Mickey's Not So Scary. Posted a photo, did all right, and then you know, I kind of continued doing that for a while until lockdown happened, like you said, and just started making more content, video content, and Peter Pan was, you know, the only costume I had that time, and I was like, people love this. Like, I'll do like some silly like flying Peter Pan videos or, you know, whatever it is, just to kind of bring that wholesome Disney vibe. Obviously, my vibe has shifted slightly.
I mean, I would say slightly. I remember, I Nate, first of all, like for the family at home who don't know, you are like my cosplay internet crush. I'm like completely, your energy is so infectious. I'm like wild about you. But I remember being on the sofa. I came back from like the grocery store and I like Lysol down all my chips or whatever. And I was like, this world is chaos. And I went to TikTok and there you were doing push-ups as Peter Pan. And I was just like, this guy is having like the best time of his life. And it really, I want to say I can understand quite easily how all you needed was your phone and one Peter Pan costume, because it's not so much like the costume or the cosplay, but it was your energy that you were bringing at a time where the world probably really needed it.
Well, that's, you know, it's funny you say that, because that is and still is my favorite video of all time, because
Well, it's great.
it was so much fun to make. And it was, yeah, it was at that point, when content creation was just at the start of what it was, when, you know, very few people had TikTok accounts, or, you know, video content wasn't, you know, this thing that you had to pump out a video every single day. It was just like, it was fun. And that's exactly what it was. There's nothing there behind anything other than, I just want a creative outlet for a time where I'm stuck in this 400 foot or 400 square foot condo. And what can I do but this? So.
Well, I think you did a lot in terms of, you know, bringing that energy and everything to people who were also stuck in their condos during lockdown. I was in New York during the lockdown. We had nothing to do. It was terrifying. But one of the things that I felt really great to connect with you early on was how open and transparent you are about your fitness journey and sort of where you began and where you came. And I'm curious, what was the impetus for that fitness journey and signing up for that Disney marathon?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's one of those things that I actually don't talk to a ton of people about, like how it all started and, you know, that type of stuff. But, you know, going through, I guess, from the age of 16 to 26, actually, I was in a very long-term relationship that was very unhealthy for me, physically and emotionally, of course. So it was kind of that finding myself again type of thing, where it was like, when I finally was able to be myself, when I was finally able to think about what I needed to be healthy and happy, that's kind of where it all started. And fitness was not where I thought I was going to go with it, to be honest. Like, you know, I did everything from self-help books to, you know, working on my career, and, you know, everything that I could try and think of that would just like progress me and make me think of myself in a better way. But fitness was in one of those things that ended up being, you know, if I do 15 minutes a day today, even if that's all I can do, that's 15 minutes more than I would have done the day before. And it just became something that was habit, whereas it was very much like, I just have to do this, I have to get through it, you know, And eventually it just became something I loved so much, because it doesn't matter to me, if I had a great workout or had a bad workout. It was something where even if it was 1% better than it was the day before, it was still an improvement. And it kind of gave me a different perspective on myself of, not having to be perfect, but if I'm making progress, that's all that matters. And people can hate on me. People, there's always gonna be bullies. There's, whether it's a relationship or a friend, or not necessarily a friend, but you know what I mean. Like if it's someone in your life that isn't putting that effort to care for you, as long as you care for yourself and you believe in yourself, that's all that matters. So it kind of gave me that perspective, which was nice.
Yeah, I'm very transparent that I suffer from anorexia and really bad body dysmorphia. And I think you hit the nail, with the hammer there when you were talking about toxic relationships sort of in your life. And it's not just like, oh, a disgruntled friend for a week. I mean, we're talking it's years and stuff like that. And my anorexia, I'm very happy to talk about it in that it stems from my father, my very unhealthy relationship with him and his own anorexia and eating disorder. And it takes a lot of courage to sort of look at that situation and flip that energy and even look at it. And again, I love the insight that you just gave, which was now that I'm sort of free from the confines of this relationship, what does Nate look like? What does Paul look like? And being able to embrace it. And it's nothing to do with vanity. I think a lot of people, always misinterpret some kind of, fitness journey or body image, in journeys as more like, oh, you're being vain. And it's like, it's not being vain. It's all about progress. It's about embracing a better light within you. And I think, dude, I'm curious, what do you think that the 26-year-old Nate, who was probably going through a really tough time, could see you today? Or what would you tell him if you saw him today?
I think if I were to tell him anything, it would be, honestly, probably a couple of things that do mean so much to me. Well, which is, again, I'm going to give you another quote, which is my favorite one. It's from Hercules, which is, "A hero isn't measured by the size of his strength, but the strength of his heart." And then the other quote that's my favorite is from Pocahontas, which is, "Sometimes the right path is not the easiest one." Which is another really, really important one for me that, and again, these were things that kind of I definitely learned on the journey, but at the very start, I wouldn't have really thought of it. Like the whole understanding that my journey of, that relationship, everything that's led up to where I am now, all the heartaches, all the everything that we've gone through, it makes us who we are, right? So, there's so many people online that don't get to see that side of us, and it's okay if they don't, but it's I don't know, it's just nice to know that all that led to what it is today.
Okay, well, tell me about the first time you saw Hercules. What was your
Oh
first
man, yeah.
exposure to
You know what's so funny is I don't even know what my first time was.
him?
Like I'm sure it was like obviously when I was a kid at some point, right? Like I don't have any clue of how it just became, this overarching theme of my life in some capacity, because I do remember, like, whether it was when Disney Plus first came out, like his first movie I watched. I had it just as like a probably ripped copy on my computer for a while as well, just like watching it when I could. It was never like that I have no clue when the first time I watched it was or how I thought of it, but it definitely was always one of those things that was just in the back of my head of just like, this is the not necessarily life I want, but this is the person that I'd want to be. I also, had a huge crush on Meg. I still do. So like
Wow.
there's that part of
She's
it too.
gorgeous.
I
Yes.
know. But yeah, it's just every time I watched it is a reminder of who I want to be and where I want to belong.
And when did you first go to Disney as a kid?
Again, I remember going like really, really young, of course, like most kids do, and you have no memory of that at all. I did go again in like during my toxic relationship, which again, to be honest, I don't really remember. It's so
Interesting.
funny because, I definitely remember the good things a lot more than the bad in most scenarios in my life. And I think that's why when I think of Disney and the first time I went to it was my half marathon. Like that was
Okay.
the first time that I was like, I'm gonna go to Disney. And I did it and I went by myself and it was the most amazing experience of my life. And I went again with another friend a year later to do another Disney half marathon, but it really was. It was that moment where, I could just be myself. I didn't need anyone else there. I ended up meeting a ton of people there, which was amazing. So I never felt like I was alone. Every time I'd walk somewhere, I'd stumble into somebody and we'd hang out and go on rides. And it was just, no one judged you. And that's all that mattered.
That's what, listen, I, as a Florida boy growing up going to Disney like once a month, that was sort of the, I can't summarize it better than you did, which is Disney is a very safe, magical place, and everyone is in their best mood when they're there, and you just ride rides and you find friends. And I think that's why the brand has endured so much with us and well into adulthood. But one of the best things about Disney recently was a couple of years ago, a little thing called the Fox Disney merger happened, and we got the X-Men with
I
Disney.
know.
And how, give us your temperature on the X-Men. We've seen some of those Wolverine videos. How are
Oh my
you with the
goodness.
X-Men?
You know what? It's the X-Men are, and I feel like this is, more of a new thing for me, but the X-Men are definitely one of my favorite, if not my favorite, fandoms out right now. But
There you go.
it's again, I think it is more of a newer thing for me, which is something to say because previous to that, growing up, my dad and my family was like super into Star Wars, right? So like, that was a big thing for me growing up. Marvel, of course, we'll call it generic Marvel, right? Like most, probably more Spider-Man than anything else. But then, X-Men, the animated series, like I grew up, I was born in 91. So like show coming out in 92, like that was my childhood as well, right? So all of it. But again, one of the biggest things for me in the last few years, we'll call it, is I've had so much exposure to how messed up the world is, and how badly we need support for diversity and inclusion, and all these other things. And the X-Men just being this overarching love story for diversity and how much support they actually and how much support we all need, has spoken absolute volumes to me. And I think that is a large reason right now X-Men has become so important to me.
Yeah, and I gotta tell you, all the news with X-Men 97 out there.
Yes.
How excited are you for X-Men 97 being growing up with the original series?
I'm absolutely ecstatic. I my next few cosplays are very much all tied to it. I just
Oh, really?
yeah
Okay.
I yeah I don't know is you know it, I think another piece of it too is I've been so swamped by Star Wars and Marvel Cinematic Universe and all these other movies and shows that just keep getting like thrown at us, and it's like one, I can't keep up, and my interest level for them has all shot to absolutely what feels like nothing. I'm busy doing other things in my life, but continuing like the original animated series is not something I will look over in the slightest. Like day one, we are watching everything we can. Like it's, yeah, for sure.
Oh, we are waking up
Yeah.
at 3 a.m., whatever the drop is, just for
Yeah.
those episodes. I think they're airing on Wednesdays now. And I have to tell you, I've seen Beau DeMaio, who's the showrunner for X-Men 97 Regrammu. And I have to tell you, Beau DeMaio, we trust
I know.
because I there is nothing about the series that has come out yet that I'm like, oh, why did they do that? No, everything has been perfect. Everything. And hearing him talk about the X-Men, I forget, where did he give this quote? Was it, I think it was Rolling Stone? No, it wasn't Rolling Stone. It was wherever they were running the articles when the trailer dropped. But he was here like, the X-Men are all about telling humanity, let's go into the future together. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, this guy just understands the X-Men on a different level than I even considered.
Yep.
And I've been a fan for like over three decades.
Well, I have been extremely blessed with the people I've gotten to know and meet and stuff like that. And Bo has become a very close friend in the last little while as well.
Oh,
and he's just, you know, exactly what you said. He not only understands X-Men, but he just understands humans. He understands what people need. He, you know, just recently too, like I was just talking about something that, you know, was on my mind, and, you know, he gives the best advice in the world. It's just, I would trust him with absolutely everything. So yes, I am very, 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 very excited for X-Men, I said, to say the least.
All right. So because we are an X-Men focused podcast, we're going to ask you some fun X-Men questions.
All right.
And one of them being, who is your favorite X-Man?
All right. So I got two answers for that.
Let's hear it.
My favorite X-Man was Gambit.
100%. Okay.
Have his first issue, you know, comic, what is it? Uncanny X-Men 2. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Off the top of my head. But I'm horrible with those numbers.
Comics. But when I was a kid, I loved magic, like playing cards and magic and stuff like that. So it's just seeing him with his cards and everything, like that just spoke to me. I loved it. Gambit was it for me for the longest time. Right now, though, it's Scott Summers.
Cyclops was right, dude, and he looks so good in the X-Men 97 trailer.
So good. Yeah, I know. So you know, it's one of those things where I always feel like generally when I am, you know, looking at characters and stuff like that, there's a certain amount of my personality that I have to either see or get reflected through these characters, and he really is just such a Boy Scout, and I freaking love that. Like I love Cyclops.
Is there any hint at a X-Men cosplay that you had said? Like, can you drop us a hint at?
I mean, I could drop you in. I could just tell you right now. Yeah. But yeah, I am doing my very first super high quality cosplay will be Cyclops, and it should be ready for X-Men 97.
Stop it. I literally am fanboying out right now because I mean, listen, Cyclops is my X-Men crush. So I love that you're going to be doing that. That is incredible.
So it's for a while. I'm not sure if you know, like Parallel Life Studios.
Yep. Yep.
So I've been working with them for a little bit on that one. Originally I was talking to them about doing a John Kent Superman.
Oh,
because John Kent is another one of my favorite characters of all time. Because again, he's, you know, love Superman, but like John Kent, and I don't know if you've kind of followed along with any of the stories and stuff like that of it, but like he's just another one of those characters that's just like, you know, I resonate with him as just, you know, he's just a good person. And again, being a hero isn't necessarily about punching people anymore. I mean, it is obviously, but like
it's a little bit more than that. Yeah.
It's a little bit more than that. Yeah. So originally I was going to be doing that, but then when I kind of got a little bit more and more into X-Men, I was like, screw it, let's switch it. We're doing Cyclops. So I'm very excited to have a really nice Cyclops cosplay coming soon.
I love that so much. Wait, so if you're going to embody Cyclops, I have to ask you, Emma Frost or Jean Grey, which one do you pick?
It's funny, you asked me this before too, and I said Jean Grey. But you know what? It's a tough one for me because I definitely would probably choose Jean Grey just because, again, I'm thinking animated series and stuff like that, kind of going through it. But you know, if I was to see them side by side, I'd probably walk over to Emma Frost.
Listen, I'm a huge Jean Grey fan. Jean Grey's sort of like my favorite X-Man out there. I mean, I love Nate very much, but Jean will always be number one. But yeah. I stand Cyclops and Emma together. I love Jean being White Phoenix in the White Hot Room, and yeah. I love Scott with Emma. I think Emma, because she's so the antithesis of a Boy Scout and yeah. sort of will do what needs to be done, right? I think there is this fallacy with like Emma where people think that Emma is just a quote unquote bitch, but she's not. She's actually a deeply caring individual and teacher who will do what needs to be done to save mutant kind. And it's that sort of morally gray area when paired with Cyclops, who wants to do everything he can do to save mutants, but just more of a Boy Scout approach. Oh, chef's kiss is perfect.
1000%. And you know, I think this is even again when I'm saying the Jean Grey Emma Frost thing, it's definitely again coming from that old memories of the show and the dynamic and stuff like that. But you know, when I think of even Hercules and Meg, right?
Yeah.
The whole Black Cat Golden Retriever energy is. Yeah, I don't know. to me, that's the only way it's got to be done. Like, even for myself, I always find myself in, if I'm getting into a relationship or in a relationship, it's literally always that dynamic as well, where don't necessarily need someone more assertive or whatnot, but definitely bringing a different energy to the table than myself.
You know, I don't think I've seen Hercules since. It first came out, and I took my little brother to see it there. I loved the animation, and one of my friends, I was going to say cosplay, but she wasn't cosplaying. It was a Halloween party. She dressed up as Meg, and everyone went wild for her that year. Wait, what year did the movie come out? Was it 96, 97?
Yeah, it was one of those two.
Yeah.
I want to say 97, but you could be right, 96 too.
Are there any other Disney characters that you are like crazy about?
I don't know. To be honest, not really.
Like Hercules is up there.
Yeah,
like number one, no more.
You know, and that's the thing. To me, it's like if you were to give me a fandom or anything to just pick, I wouldn't necessarily even just pick Disney as a fandom. Even though Hercules is like right up there, number one, mm-hmm. he's at the top. And then I'd probably go into, Marvel, Star Wars, DC, and then get to like the Disney fandoms again, probably in some respect. So I don't, there's probably no other like Disney character that's like that up there for me. But Herc and Meg for sure are right at the top.
Okay. So we are a little shady here. My next question is, who is your least favorite X-Man, and why is it one Hank McCoy? Why is it that sociopath? Why?
Oh, geez. You know what? I actually don't know who my least favorite X-Men would be.
All right. That's a good response.
You know what? It's one of those things that I feel like they all are so different from each other, which I absolutely love. I think, there are like a few like little maybe cop out, like who was it, I can't remember, Havoc, is it?
Yeah.
Like, and I think a part of it was from like the movie where he's like hula hooping I was like,
this is true,
I don't need this. but there's really none that I dislike. I think growing up, one of the characters I liked the least was actually Nightcrawler, even though I love him now. But that was literally just because he was my brother's favorite X-Men. So I can't like him. No. But that has nothing to do with the character.
Yeah, my little brother. Is your brother older or younger?
He's older. He's older. Yeah.
All right. So like scenario with your brother, I had a favorite and my little brother was like, well, no, I can't like that character. You know what I mean? And then we'd play like Ocarina or Marvel versus Capcom and we'd just like fight all afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
Did you read the Gambit miniseries, the Lee Weeks Gambit miniseries that came out in the 90s? And the only reason why I'm asking is because the art there is like the definitive art, like in my opinion, for Gambit.
No, I never did. You know, it's also you know, I think what's really cool too is sorry, and this is kind of like pivoting just slightly from that question, but no, I didn't read it.
You're like, no, thank you, next. Moving on.
yeah, but I was just gonna say that what's really cool is I think with kind of being more ingrained into the cosplay community now, and you know, whether it's you know, content creation was kind of like a step towards the cosplay community. And now I'm definitely more ingrained into the cosplay community, especially here in Toronto, and kind of hopefully stepping my toe into more across North America and all that. But the coolest thing is, you know, meeting all these people, you know, in the same generation that we are, with the same interests, that love the same shit, and being able to talk about things and do things that you never one thought you could or had the time to do, or you know, people were always doing something else. So it's like right now we've got like a comic book club. So rather than doing a book club, we do a comic book club where it's like every month someone picks a different comic book and you know, we all read it and we, you know, meet up and talk about it and that type of stuff. And like those are things that you wouldn't expect to be able to do in your 30s, but like it's amazing, right? So it's
It's
like,
amazing and it's fun.
yeah. So hearing about anything, like any comics that or whatever it is, miniseries that are just like amazing and something I should check out, I'm all for.
Dude, we will send it your way. But
Yes.
okay, so you started doing content creation. Wait, where was that moment that things started like kind of like taking off and you were like, oh shit, I think I have something here.
Well, that was definitely TikTok. Like, I mean, you know, during COVID, like I said, the Peter Pan thing was kind of like the start of the cosplay, I guess, aspects of it. And I would do a lot of like kind of Disney transitions. I used my background is actually in animation and game development, so
No, I
I
didn't know
tried to
that.
use
That's really cool.
so I did that for about 13 years. And then when COVID kind of happened, I took some of that experience to just like you know, edit my videos in a little bit of a different way and spent a lot of time doing that. And I don't remember the actual video that took off, but there was a point where it was like, you know, I hit 10,000 followers. I was like, holy crap, that's a lot. And then I hit 30,000. I was like, holy crap, that's a crap ton. And then it just kind of kept going for a while. And you know, the one of the different things about my account that I find in a lot of other people's accounts was a lot of people would go from like 0 to 2 million in overnight, and they would
Yeah.
just like get that. I felt like mine was, you know, it was quick, but there was never a moment where it stopped growing, and there was never a moment where it grew fast. It was just kind of like bringing people in slowly, getting to meet them, building up this community, and it really became this really, really wonderful thing where I got to know a ton of new people. You know, trying to do lives as much as I could and get to know people and it just, yeah, became something wonderful. But there was no point where it was just like, oh, this is it. This, you know, we've got it. It was very much just like, oh, this is something I love and we're going to keep going and keep climbing. But yeah, TikTok during COVID was something else. That's for sure.
What was, wait, I'm sorry, you said you were working in video game development for 13 years?
So my background was video game development and animation, and
Okay.
then previous to that, I did computer science. But I actually designed theme parks for 13 years.
What?
Yeah, so my actual background was in themed entertainment. So yeah, so I helped manage a studio that did interactive visualization for theme parks. So we did everything from Universal to Six Flags to Legoland, Dollywood, a ton of stuff in China and Saudi Arabia. Like I've kind of worked on almost everything in some capacity.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've never met someone who
Yeah.
designs theme parks or designed theme parks. I'm sorry. So I have like a ton of like I'm like throwing out this outline I had sent you. Wait, what goes into designing a theme park? Like, what are some like component? I would
Of
imagine
course, of course, yeah.
engagement, you know, obviously being the
Yeah.
number one thing, but.
So the way to think of it is like our company that I was at previously had five studios, right? So you can think of it like it's almost like a place that builds a little town. So there's an architecture studio for obviously the architecture. There's interior studio. There's graphics, wayfinding, signage, that type of stuff. And then there is landscape architecture. You know, and then my studio, which was a creative studio. So you kind of, you work back and forth between each of the studios. So landscapes work on the master plan and kind of get the layout done for the parks. And then they're working with the architects who are kind of putting the buildings in and all that type of stuff. Interiors, obviously working on retail and working on again, the queues and the buildings with the architects. And it's just kind of back and forth. But my actual studio was the creative studio. So it was a lot of concept art for the attractions, a lot of concept art just for the areas. And then there was the interactive visualization, which was the studio I managed, which was basically, if you've ever played Roller Coaster Tycoon, that is almost exactly what it is. So
Yes.
we're taking the master plans from the landscape architects, building that out in usually Unreal Engine or Unity. And then we take the buildings from the architects. Usually those were done in SketchUp or Revit or something like that. We'll import those in, get those buildings in there, render them, light them, theme them, get the attractions and the roller coasters from whatever manufacturer we're working with. And then we drop a little person in there and you walk around the theme park in 3D and get the full experience of it and send it off to clients, see if they like it, and then if they're like, yeah, this is what we want, then we build it.
This is the coolest job I have ever heard of in my entire life, bro. That you did 13 years, and do you mind me asking, did you just leave because you were taken off on other endeavors, or was
Yeah,
it?
so it was basically that. Like at the end, I was definitely ready to take a step back from it all. I had already at that point been starting to work on my online coaching and fitness stuff. Obviously with TikTok, Instagram, everything there too, my life had just kind of taken a different direction. And don't get me wrong, it was one of the, if not coolest, full-time experiences of my life. If I went back to a full-time job, 1,000% it would either be there or like Imagineering. Like there's no doubt I would get back into it in a heartbeat. But it was very much a 9 to 5 where you are working for other creatives, and having to, which is not a bad thing, listening to other people's ideas and do them, but it is a little bit more freeing to be making, silly, stupid videos online and bringing a community together and doing online coaching and stuff like that. So, yeah.
First of all, the videos you post of some of your clients that you do a fitness journey with, it just puts the biggest smile on my face and seeing them progress. How is it like doing those sort of that intimacy and that journey with someone and helping them gain confidence where it was probably something they were staggering with before?
It's very cool. I'm actually kind of me and my other friend Zach right now. I've taken a step back from kind of what I was doing and re-looking at a way to make it better, because one of the things I did notice was there are moments, and a lot of them, where I'm working with somebody and I see that they've lost 40, 50 pounds, and they send me pictures and they look absolutely amazing and so stoked for them and just everything, right? The big thing for me though right now is I've noticed that as I continue building this up, there's more people that I'm working with, and my time gets stretched thinner and thinner and thinner to the point that I'm not able to have that intimacy that you're talking about. And that's something that's so important to me, both especially when it comes to anything online, Instagram, TikTok, being able to be on these lives and talk to people and make sure that people are, feeling seen and heard and comfortable with everything they're doing. So, I actually hired my friend Zach to work with me, so that he can help do these one-on-one programs with people. And then I'm there as, someone that's able to engage in the overall community, talk to them, be there as support as well, but less hands-on with the actual training, because he actually gives me his plan. So I'm like, wow, he can just give other people his plans too. So that's kind of where it's been, but it is the most, I've literally broken down into tears the first time that someone reached out to me and told me they lost, 60, 70 pounds and, their life has changed and
Yeah,
whatever it is.
that's
It's very cool.
life-changing. I mean, you are giving people an opportunity to to start a new life. And again, it's not about any vain or vanity, but the progress you make and how you feel about yourself. And I forgot, like, Shannon Doherty, I was listening to her podcast the other day, and she was talking about her own fitness journey and how just, like, it doesn't matter what I look like, it's how I feel on the inside, and how that sort of, like, spreads out to the world. And again, like, not to go, again, to reiterate a point of being your, like, number one fanboy out there, but, like, I think seeing that with you, it's the light you bring to somewhere like TikTok.
Thank you. And you know, and that's exactly the point, though, is like, and again, that's why I always go back to Hercules, like, a hero is measured by the size of his strength, but the strength of his heart. And it's like, over and over, it as long as these people, you know, I feel like they're, you know, they've got a community that's there to support them on whatever their journey is. You know, the journey could take years, could take months, you know, it doesn't matter, as long as people, you know, are feeling like they are achieving what they want to.
So I have a question for you. And TikTok is something I don't really use. I just go on to creep, like, all my favorite cosplayers or content creators. What do you think makes TikTok so special for someone who is a content creator, who is a cosplayer, who is a personal coach? What do you think is so special about TikTok?
Unfortunately, nothing anymore. I know, it's, but you know,
like, I'm about to spit on my coffee. I was not expecting you to say that. I was like, I will let him say this answer right here. I love that you said that, bro. You
know,
love it.
There's absolutely nothing. TikTok was absolutely revolutionary during COVID, because it was, you know, the first time that there was no following page. I mean, there's following page. You can go to someone, but you just go to your For You page and you just scroll. It could be absolutely anybody that pops up on this feed. Yeah. And if you have good content, you might pop up there. You'll be discovered. And it gave everyone kind of like a very equal chance of, you know, growth in some capacity. And I thought that was very, very, very cool. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, TikTok has kind of gone the complete opposite way of that. And they're trying to become something that I don't know if it's something they ever wanted to be, but, you know, they definitely got away from their roots now. So it's like, you know, all my friends, everyone I know, you know, you go on there, and because there's no, like, actual following page anymore, and a lot of the people that have these big followings are, you know, under review because of either, you know, people that will report them just because they're jealous or whatever it is.
Yeah.
All of these accounts are now completely almost dead in the water. Like mine, as an example, on TikTok, like, you know, I've got like 2.1 million followers, but I get maybe, you know, 5-10,000 views on a reel there. The exact same reel I put onto Instagram, I'll get, you know, 800,000 views on. Wow. So it's like, it's completely shifted now to a point where the people that want to see you will find you on Instagram. They'll already be following you, and they'll see you pop up on their homepage and all that type of stuff. And then at the same time, if you're looking for discoverability and stuff, you'll probably be on Reels on Instagram as well. So, you know, as a content creator, I don't see any reason people should be on TikTok anymore, which is a sad thing, because it was such a huge platform for myself and for most of my, you know, content creator friends that blew up overnight. But now it's, you know, it's YouTube and it's Instagram.
Well, I'm always trying to crack YouTube. I don't know how to do YouTube. I'm pretty decent with podcasting, but I'm going to agree with you on Instagram. I think there is a discoverability and sort of an engagement now with Instagram that I have been pleasantly surprised with. Mm-hmm. And I did notice that there was some sort of exodus from TikTok to Instagram. But I mean, again, TikTok has never been like my venue, you know, that I've gone to. I've sort of, again, just been, you know, that account without a profile picture, and I'm just like looking at what other people are doing there. Mm-hmm. What do you think it is, though? Let me do the pointed question a little bit more about video content, though, with this kind of stuff, why that engages in a way that we did not have that before, maybe like a decade ago.
Well, I think the good thing about video content, and I think we're going to continue going down this path, but I think more and more people just want to see authenticity.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, with pictures, it's so easy to, like, change what your butt looks like, or you know, yeah, whatever.
Never done that myself.
I have that.
No, oh, I have to. Facetune before I had a paywall was like my best friend. Anyways,
but you know, like with photos and things like that, it was so easy to fake who you were outside of that. Videos, you know, again, were kind of a step in the right direction where, you know, now you have to be, you know, at least, you know, showing your emotions in some way. You can kind of read people generally through their eyes and their smile, and there's a lot more to it than just an individual shot. So I think that was a really big thing moving forward. And I do believe we're going to be moving even further past that sometime soon. I don't know what that is. And I think possibly it could be, you know, these type of things where it's like, again, podcasts where or YouTube podcasts where people can actually hear everything you're talking about and what's on your mind. Live videos. I think being live is going to be super important to have that, you know, engagement with a content creator or with someone that you want to get to know. Because again, videos are now also getting to the point where it's very easy to doctor them. With the new AI stuff coming out, it's like you don't know what's going to be like real or fake anymore. And as we move forward with like AI and all this type of stuff, it's so hard to really figure out what's real and what's fake and what people are being sincere or authentic and where that's coming from. And I think, with that, going into these, you know, live videos and things like that are going to be kind of the only way that people can actually get that human interaction that they're looking for. Because we're such social people, and we want to be seen, and we want to talk to people, we want to have that interaction. And you know, going on TikTok and scrolling and you know, you almost get to become friends with them even without like necessarily knowing them or talking to them or anything like that in some respect. But yeah, I do think the further we go down this line of social media and technology, we're just going to demand a new way to interact with people.
I have to tell you, I knew you were pretty awesome because I already met you at MegaCon, but hearing you speak and having such a good grasp on social media and why it resonates with people, it was almost like this little light bulb moment that just went on in my head when you said, we're social people. And this is why TikTok sort of took off during lockdown. This is why we created these Instagram accounts, these podcasts, because we are all, to quote Sailor Moon, we are all lonely stars gravitating towards each other. Yeah. And I think that's one of the beauties of social media and why there is an emphasis on live content. Because, yeah, with AI now, bro, that's like, it's so fucked up that like now sometimes you're looking at a photo. And I like to think that myself, I could see something and think it's fake, but I have been fooled. And I'm like, oh shit, that's not real. And and again, when these lines start blurring, what do you have left? You have live interaction with content creators, with people of interest. Yeah. And I do think that is the future of social media. That's very astute.
100%. And I think the other piece too that a lot of us forget is like, why I think it was first made or should have been made was, you know, just in the name, you know, social media. It's like, it's media to be social. It's, you know, it's to make friends. It's to, you know, share your experiences. You know, the same reason that, you know, the thing I am absolutely the happiest about of, you know, my time through this is just the people I've met. Like, even like I said, MegaCon, like being able to meet all these people I'd never met before in my life, or talking about Bo earlier, like being able to meet him or any of these people, like you don't get these experiences without it, right? And people take it for granted and use social media as just like a status thing now. They don't use it to actually, you know, I so often have seen it on my end as well, like being done to me or being done to other friends, where people will use social media as a stepping stone. They'll gravitate towards people and they'll make friends with them. And then the moment they get what they need from them or they have a higher following, they'll, you know, forget about them. And exactly. And it's so weird because, you know, it shouldn't be like that. And I'm so thankful for the friends that I've met through it, because not a single one of them cares about numbers.
I listen. God, like I'm just crazy about you right now because I have said this before. It's so weird. The more like your social media like reach grows, people become a little bit more opportunistic, or they act weird because they see a number. And I wish I could always just hide that follower count for something. Yep. I wish I didn't have to share any sort of numbers or anything, because people do become odd and opportune. And I have to tell you, I think there's a reason why you have your success, because I think you are truly one of those rare people out there who are just so incredibly authentic.
Thank you. That means a lot. Appreciate it.
Okay, Nate, before we let you go, you mentioned that you're going to be partaking a little bit more in the cosplay community. We know you're going to be doing Cyclops, which I literally am like, my head is spinning mm-hmm. for it. My question for you, though, is let's say budget isn't an issue. You can do any cosplay, any universe, any brand, any character. What would be your dream cosplay to do?
Yeah. You know what? I think dream cosplay will just have to go back to Hercules. You know, it is one of those things where I have a Hercules cosplay, but it's like one of those like fun.com Halloween costumes. I want a real nice leather Hercules cosplay that is just like to the nines. That would be my dream. But you know, I to that point though too is like, I feel like my interests and my desires for cosplay change weekly. So like right now Cyclops is like the top, right? You know, you get the X-Men hype going on and everything. It's like there's really nothing more I could be excited for than that right now. On a general basis,
well, I gotta tell you, I'm so excited for your Cyclops. I mean, it's Jim Lee, X-Men animated Cyclops. I cannot wait till that debuts.
It's gonna be great,
Nate. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, if people are engaging with this community, they know where to find you. But for on the off chance we have someone here who doesn't know where to find you, where can they hit you up? Where can they see your content?
Yes, thank you so much. If anyone is looking for my content, you can find me on Instagram or TikTok at nate.k.weir. You know, and then on those pages as well, you'll find my Beacons page for all my other links. If you're looking for my online coaching, it's hitforheroes.com. Again, you can just find that through my TikTok or Instagram as well. But that is where to reach me.
All right, Familia, we have a lot of stuff coming up in the next few weeks. You know, I do all my content on the fly, but we will definitely be covering X-Men 97. And we have a couple interviews that are going to be pretty interesting and some upcoming guests that I can't wait to share. But hit us up at Power of X-Men, and we'll see you all later.